Good morning, Your Honors. I am John Case. My attorney registration number is 15443, and I represent the appellants Berkus et al. The 208 fractional interests in the residences at Little Nell Project should constitute lots under ILSA. A division of this court that held otherwise in the PFW case came out on August 16th. That case was presented by the appellant with a false argument, which they properly rejected, but they also did not consider or even mention that ILSA is supposed to be construed liberally in favor of broad coverage with exemptions construed narrowly. ILSA is, of course, a consumer protection statute that prohibits the sale of lots without compliance with the Act, but doesn't in itself define a lot. The HUD guidelines do define a lot, and they define it as an undivided interest in land if such interest includes the right to exclusive use of a specific portion of the land or unit. So the essential question here is, what is that specific portion of the land or unit to which you have a right of exclusive use? There is a rotating reservation system that is used here. And it is a relatively new development in land sales, and it created some intellectual confusion because it severed that normal link between the unit you own and the unit you stay in. This did not, however, change fractional owner status here as having exclusive use of a specific portion of the project. And the relevant portion is the unit within the unit type, the unit that you are assigned on.
Pardon me for interrupting, counsel. Yes. If I may, but to that argument directly, I think that's a pretty ephemeral or ethereal argument, because that means that depending on the way the reservation works out, one could have a use of the place in unit one and the next time in unit four. And thus it's not in any specific unit, but the ownership interest is conceptually in the whole, isn't it?
You're right. But I would disagree in that it is in a specific unit, but the specific unit is not the same on each visit. And my argument is that the guidelines would not prohibit that.
You're asserting essentially that it's the group of three-bedroom condominiums that comprises the unit?
No. That is the unit type. There are two types in this project. There's three-bedroom condominiums and four-bedroom condominiums. If you purchase a fractional unit in the three bedrooms, you will always be assigned a three-bedroom condominium. It may or may not be the same condominium in which you own a fractional interest. And you will not get the same condominium on each visit. You will get a different condominium. But each time, you are guaranteed the use of a three-bedroom condominium.
Mr. Case, would your argument be any different if there were no three and four bedrooms? Let's say if we were applying this law to a development that only had three bedrooms and had the same sort of rotating reservation system?
No, it wouldn't. I would still be arguing that on each visit you got a specific three-bedroom condominium, and that three-bedroom condominium did not have to be the same one on each visit to satisfy ILSA and the guidelines. The PFW appellant was arguing that the specific portion of the land of which you have exclusive use is the unit type, the three-bedroom units or the four-bedroom condominiums, which led to the conclusion of the PFW court, well, under that theory, then, aren't there only two lots, the three bedrooms and the four bedrooms? But the specific portion that I argue that you have exclusive is the unit that you are guaranteed to get and do get on each visit. It's not the unit type, it is the unit itself. You may or may not be assigned the unit that you own part of, but I don't believe under ILSA that does matter, because you still have a guaranteed right to the exclusive use of a specific designated unit. And that guaranteed right of exclusive use is for a defined and recurring period. But you are correct. It is a different unit on each visit.
Right. And doesn't that again suggest, like in the PFW case, that you're arguing that there's a possessory interest in the whole of these 19 three-bedroom units?
I think over time that would be correct, yes.
And so then don't you have the same problem as in the PFW case, that you're basically suggesting that there are only two units, the 19 units for the three bedrooms, and I believe seven for the four bedrooms.
That's correct. There's 19 three bedrooms, seven four bedrooms. And this is the same project, the same form contract as the PFW case.
So just one unit for all 19 and one unit for all seven. Isn't that where that argument ends up?
No, what I think the distinction is you purchase a fractional unit. That is your lot. That lot has to include a right of exclusive use of some portion of the land or unit under the guidelines. The guidelines do not say that that specific portion always has to be the same condominium, but you have to have a right of exclusive use that's included with your lot. So my argument is that the fractional unit that you purchase is the lot under ILSA, and it includes a right of exclusive use to a portion of the land or unit. That portion, you are entirely correct, can change from visit to visit, and does change.
What's your ownership interest?
Your ownership interest never does. You purchase a fractional unit, you get a special warranty deed, et cetera, to that unit. But that unit, under the rotating reservation system, which is a covenant that is entered into at the time you enter into the contract, puts your fractional unit into the system, and then you are then within the unit type. But for each visit, you get a specific condominium to reside in. And I believe that the guidelines in ILSA do not preclude that from coverage. There is an example that refers to the repeated use of a specific designated lot, as my colleagues here like to stress, but that reference is in an example, not the definition. And as the guidelines say in the introduction, examples are given, but the examples do not in any way exhaust the myriad possibilities in land development sales activity, nor do they set absolute standards. The guidelines themselves tell you that they are an interpretive rule, not a substantive regulation. And courts have, on occasion, not relied on the guidelines when their interpretation is inconsistent with ILSA's consumer protection purpose. See, for example, a case called Nahigian that came out of the Fourth Circuit last year. I did not cite it in the brief, but it is found at 677 Fed 3rd 579. So I believe what the PFW court was presented with was a false argument regarding which part of the project constituted the specific portion, and I believe they correctly rejected that. But the PFW court did not address that ILSA's remedial purpose requires it to be construed liberally in favor of broad coverage with narrow exemptions, nor does that argument appear to have been advanced much by the appellant in that case. The guidelines definition of lot is not exclusive, and I would suggest that you will see that it can be easily construed to provide coverage. The important point is that the PFW court didn't address that. How the act is supposed to be construed liberally to provide coverage. Virtually every court that has addressed that issue of construction has recited that rule.
Excuse me, I'm sorry for interrupting, but I guess the difficulty that I'm having is in the necessity or the purpose of the word specific and the definition of lot. Would your argument work the same if you left that out, exclusive use of a portion of the land? If you just left out specific, wouldn't it work the same way?
I'm not sure I understand what you're asking.
Let's say that the definition didn't have the word specific portion. It just said that it includes the right to exclusive use of a portion of the land. If the word specific were left out, wouldn't your argument work the same way, the argument you're making today?
I think it would, yes.
Well, so what are we supposed to do with the word specific? If specific doesn't mean unit one as opposed to unit four, if you can just leave that word out and reach the same result, I'm not sure what we do with an extra word.
I think specific does have a particular meaning, and you are assigned a specific condominium for each visit. But where in the guidelines or in ILSA does it say that that specific condominium must be the same for every visit, is my point. I understand what you're saying, I believe, and I think I know what you mean. But yes, you do get a specific condominium. You do not get some right to stay anywhere in the 19 three bedrooms. For each visit, under the rotating reservation system, you get a specific unit.
Okay, so I think what you're arguing, if I'm understanding it correctly, is that specific is determined at the time you make the reservation, but not before.
Yes, I don't think the guidelines preclude that the specific condominium that you get can change within it. The unit types are also a specific portion of the project, but the specific unit that you get is a particular condominium. The Tenth Circuit also noted in McCown v. Heidler case that since new areas of fraud are constantly being conceived, the act should be construed not technically and restrictively, but flexibly to effectuate its remedial purpose. I think the crux of the problem with the PFW court's opinion is that allowing timeshare developers to circumvent ILSA with a rotating reservation system would potentially open the door to the sorts of abuse that ILSA is intended to curb. The Act's purpose in keeping that door closed is the primary reason that construction, the liberal rule of construction, has been cited by nearly every case taking up the question. The PFW court didn't appear to consider this rule of construction. The opinion doesn't mention it. And since that ruling is contrary to the general rule of broad coverage, and hence apparently contrary to Congress's intent in enacting the legislation, I would ask that this court depart from that panel's reasoning. The appellant in PFW presented the court with the wrong argument, I believe, and did not raise the correct argument, the one that you are now addressing, as to whether a specific unit that you are assigned can change with each visit.
But only that, pardon me.
Sorry, go ahead.
Aside from PFW, I don't believe you cited any case that talks about this sort of rotating reservation system, have you?
I haven't, and I'm aware.
Have you found any other case that talks about that?
I have not. I have not found a case on fractional units in the United States, a published case that I'm aware of. The rotating reservation system is fairly new, was adopted mostly for the purpose of establishing uniform pricing. If a developer can price all, if you have the rotating reservation system, you can price all your three-bedroom units or all your four-bedroom units at a single price, and you don't have to account for location within the project, view or lack of, et cetera. But I would respectfully request that you read the definition of lot with the rule of liberal construction in mind. This is a new form of ownership, but it is one of the myriad possibilities that has occurred in land development sales activity that the guidelines contemplated, and ILSA should provide coverage here. I think you've addressed the issue directly, and I think you understand my argument. Do you have any other questions that I could address?
Not at this time.
All right. I thank you for your consideration.
May it please the court. My name is Jeff Lippa. My attorney registration number is 36835, and I'm joined at council table by David Goldberg. Together, we represent the residences at Little Nell Development, LLC. Your Honors, this is a case about buyer's remorse. And as part of that case, this appeal was started as a matter of first impression, as Mr. Case indicated. There are no other cases, reported cases, certainly regarding fractional interests. That is until we had the PFW decision last month, which, as your honors knows, involves not only fractional interests generally, but fractional interests specifically at the same project that we're talking about today. The only factual difference between that case and this is that Mr. Case's clients are purchasers of three-bedroom units, whereas the PFW plaintiff was a purchaser of a four-bedroom unit. That's a distinction without difference for purposes of the analysis in the PFW decision, which we think is accurate and is a clear roadmap to this court's decision in this case. Today, for the first time, Mr. Case indicates that there were some false arguments presented by PFW or arguments that he would have chose not to present. I think the briefs tell a different story. I think he made the same arguments regarding unit type in the brief. That argument now having been rejected soundly by the PFW court, he's switching his argument slightly to an argument which I'd like to address now. The argument appears to be that there is no prohibition anywhere in the statute or the regulations or the guidelines that prohibits or would bear upon the factual situation here where Mr. Case's client is entitled to no specific unit, no guarantee that he will ever be able to use the specific unit that's on his contract, no guarantee that he will ever be able to use the same unit twice. It's all based on the rotating reservation policy, in which there is simply no right or no guarantee to any specific unit.
But he does have, pardon me, but he does have an interest in the complex, right?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I think that the guidelines and the regulations are clear, and the case law that interprets them, although not in the fractional context, is clear. And what we're talking about is a two-part test for a lot. It's an interest in realty, an interest in land as the first part of the test. But there's a second prong, and that's the exclusivity prong. And that's where the appellant's argument falls short in this case, and that's what they're lacking. Mr. Case has indicated that the guidelines don't address whether the unit can change or not, and I would disagree with that. I think that the guidelines specifically address that. It uses terms like repeated use and recurring basis to suggest expressly that it has to be, the thing that you're claiming has to be a lot has to be the same thing that you have an interest in. And you have to have repeated use on a reoccurring basis. And I'm specifically looking at the portion of the guidelines that says, if the purchaser of an undivided interest or a membership has exclusive repeated use or possession of a specific designated lot, even for a portion of the year, a lot as defined by the regulations exists. And the guidelines go on to say that, provide a definition for exclusivity that's cited in Mr. Case's brief, and I think it again is important to the new spin on the argument, because it says that if a purchaser has been assigned a specific lot on a reoccurring basis, the reoccurring basis language is in the guidelines, and I think specifically addresses the argument that Mr. Case is making here today, that it can, that the fact that he's acknowledging, and I think it's undisputed, that there is no right to a specific unit. As I understand his argument today, it's that that's okay under the guidelines. And I don't think that's the case based on the language I just quoted for you from the guidelines specifically. I agree with Mr. Case that that those guidelines are certainly not regulations, they're certainly not statutory, but they are entitled to deference, and they are really all that we have to go on in this case, certainly before the PFW case. And it's certainly not a reason enough to distinguish or to differentiate what the PFW court did in this case.
Mr. Lippa, would you agree that this fractional interest with a rotating reservation is, say, new technology, if you will, in the area of ownership interest?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I wouldn't say it's that residences certainly aren't the first project to implement it. It's all over Colorado now, and certainly in Florida and other places like that. It's a popular form of ownership, but it's certainly distinguishable factually from condos.
I guess what I'm getting to is that if this is a new device in ownership of these sorts of timeshares, then wouldn't it be conceivable that the guidelines wouldn't have anticipated it, and the language wouldn't necessarily directly cover this situation?
Well, that may be the case. I think that the guidelines, though, give us the framework to apply to this situation. Again, we have some other guidance out there in the form of Betcher, the Sixth Circuit case, which was talking about hotel condo units. It's not suggesting that they're fractional units, but I think the framework that court employed is what's important. And again, it's a two-part test. It's an interest in realty, but it's also this exclusivity test. And to say that we should apply that the broad remedial purpose of the act is enough to apply ILSA to all interests in realty is directly contradicted by the guidelines and by the campsite example. I think the campsite example is a perfect illustration of the fact that, yes, this has a broad remedial purpose, And yes, this is a Consumer Protection Act statute, but no, it does not apply to every single interest in land. There has to be that exclusivity element as well, and it's simply lacking in this case. Mr. Case.
Pardon me, Mr. Lipp, if I may. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Going back to Betscherer, Betscherer does not address this fractional ownership interest scenario, does it?
You're correct, Your Honor.
Yeah, and so we don't have any statement by the Sixth Circuit that the situation in this case would be treated the way that Mr. Case wants us to. Is that correct?
I agree with that, Your Honor. Again, I think the importance of Betscherer is the framework that that court applied. It can apply to an analysis of condos. It can apply to an analysis of hotel units, as it did in Betscherer, and it should apply to an analysis of fractional interests that we're dealing with in this case. In the case of condo units, when you look at exclusivity, owners have exclusivity. They are given a designated unit. They have the repeated and reoccurring right to use that unit year after year, and that's why condos have been universally held to be lots. Now, that's not always expressly addressed in the cases. I think if you look at the Winter case cited by the appellant and the Geralt case from Colorado, they don't necessarily deal with exclusivity expressly because it's assumed. It's not in dispute. Everybody, as a condo owner, you know you have the exclusive right to week 13 or whatever the case may be. So it applies, the same framework applies there and results in condos being lots. You apply the same framework in Betscherer, and the court looked at the exclusivity, the use rights that an owner has in determining whether or not those hotel hybrid units were lots, and it determined that because of the use restrictions, there was no exclusivity. And that same framework should apply here, where an owner, Mr. Case's clients, have the right to use one of the 19 three-bedroom units, but no specific unit, and there is no guarantee from year to year which unit they will be in, and no guarantee that they will ever use the specific unit that's on their purchase contract. Under the ILSA framework that's given to us by the guidelines and the statute and the regulation, that fails the exclusivity test. So to answer your question, I think what's important is the framework that the guidelines give us. And this case, while unique in some senses, in the factual sense, the same framework can and should be applied, unless and until someone in the legislature decides that the fractionals need to be treated differently to address kind of the slippery slope arguments that Mr. Case makes in his brief.
I have a problem with guidelines.
Okay.
As exclusive repeated use or possession of a specific designated lot, even for a portion of the year. I'm having trouble. It's sort of circular, isn't it, to say, here's what a lot is, a specific designated lot? It doesn't make much sense to me until you to apply the exclusive repeated use or possession when and to call it a lot when, in fact, the definition of a lot seems to sound different from that.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. I think that there is something to that. But I think the point is that what the guidelines are trying to say is what I was trying to say at the beginning. The thing that you're trying to claim as a lot has to be the same thing that you have exclusive repeated use of. And that's not what Mr. Case is arguing here today. He's acknowledging that they have that what he wants to be a lot is the unit. But what he has repeated exclusive use of is something floating and something different than that. And I think the language that you cited to here, that with language like specific, repeated, recurring, and even though I actually think that the fact that they use lot again is intentional to show just that it has to be the same thing that you're claiming to be a lot has to be the thing that you have the exclusive repeated use or possession of. And that's certainly not what Mr. Case is arguing here today, and not what the appellants in PFW were arguing when Judge Taubman and Judges Russell and Plank decided that this particular project was exempt from ILSA. Um, Your Honors, I believe I've addressed all of the issues that I wanted to address today. If you have any further questions for me, I'm happy to answer them. If not, I'd just say to you that while this, when this appeal started, it certainly was a case of first impression. But in the last month or so, that has changed. We now have a recorded decision on this exact project with sound reasoning to find the project exempt from ILSA as less than 100 lots. And I think that it properly applied the two-part test that we've been discussing today, which is that even though it's a consumer protection statute, as Mr. Case has referred to, and even though it should be applied broadly, there is a second part to that test, and that's exclusivity. And the exclusivity is something that has to be of the same unit that you've purchased. And here the appellants simply have no right or guarantee that they will ever use the unit that they've purchased. And without that, it's simply not a lot. And we would ask that this court affirm the district court's decision. Thank you, Your Honors.
Some time remaining.
Very little, but thank you.
It is a new form of ownership that is rapidly spreading. I don't think it was certainly contemplated at the time ILSA was passed. I do think that a broad construction of the guidelines would still cover it. The definition refers to these. The definition requires a lot that includes a right of specific use. But the specific use that it requires is the exclusive use of a specific portion of the land or unit. The examples to which Mr. Lippa cites and to which you inquired are in the examples. But as the guidelines said, they did their best at the time. This was an interpretive rule, but not a substantive regulation. Examples are given, but the examples do not in any way exhaust the myriad possibilities occurring in land development sales and activity, nor do they set absolute standards. I think the essential question is, don't you think that Congress would have intended it to cover these types of real estate sales if they'd been contemplated? And if you apply a liberal construction to provide broad coverage here, the guidelines allow that. The references to this specific or repeated use of a specific designated lot tend to be in the examples, not in the definition.
Pardon me, Mr. We know that ILSA has more exemptions than just the one we're talking about today.
Yes.
And at some point, don't we push the interpretive envelope so far that we're actually intruding on what Congress or HUD ought to be doing and interfering in what another branch ought to be doing about defining the way these exemptions ought to work?
Well, no, I think we're talking about a definitional issue here. There are other exemptions based on the number of lots, the type of project, but I don't think they're particularly relevant to what we're doing here. I think what we need to decide here is decide if this real estate interest is covered under the existing structure that we have with these guidelines, which I believe are now being transferred to the new regulatory board that's been formed, the CFTR. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but under these guidelines, I think they are intended to provide coverage for these myriad possibilities that may occur. I'm out of time.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments this morning. Case will stand submitted. We will get you a written opinion in due course.